Hello and welcome to There's No Business Like, a podcast where friends and industry colleagues explore topics and interview leaders in our industry of professional theatrical touring.
Welcome back to There's No Business Like. Today, I am here with my friends, Brian.
Hey, Josh. Brian Zellmer from KU Presents in Kutztown, Pennsylvania.
Katie Miller.
Hi, everyone. Katie Miller with the Midland Center for the Arts in Midland, Michigan.
Danny Lynn.
Welcome, everyone. Danielle Van Hook from the Alden and McLean, Virginia.
And Kevin.
Kevin Maynard, Quad City Arts, splitting the border between Iowa and Illinois.
Before we get started today, we would like to congratulate one of our own, Kevin, for joining the ranks of the deeply, deeply corrupt Illinois politicians by becoming the newest alderman to the city of Rock Island in Illinois. Congratulations, Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin. Congrats. You did it.
Thanks.
So today I'd like to ask you if there was any video game, movie, cartoon that you could see live on stage with a full band orchestra while showing that, what would it be? I think This Is Spinal Tap would be a lot of fun.
Yes.
As a live in concert.
Yep.
With the film playing. But so that's mine.
I have an answer for all of those. Video game, a compilation of all the music from Zelda throughout the years. Because there is still music that, like, from Ocarina of Time that gets stuck in my head probably daily. Movie, I was thinking movies like good soundtrack. I was thinking the movie Almost Famous. Be kind of a tough thing to do on stage with that many different bands, but I would love to see it. And then cartoon, early 90s X-Men.
Well, I think Kevin answered enough for all of us.
Yeah. So there we go. All right. Start the interview.
Thanks, Alderman Maynard, for being an overachiever there.
Nerd.
You're not wrong. So.
I'll go in the absolute opposite direction. I would love to see the movie Sleepless in Seattle live, like with the film and then a band. And maybe Harry Connick Jr. could do this because he's on the original soundtrack, but it just has some really wonderful classic tunes. So I think you have an amazing like jazz orchestra play underneath that movie and some killer vocalists and accompany that classic film with all the wonderful music.
Yeah, so I've also got some thoughts about this. A Schitt's Creek immersive experience. But it's either The Crows Have Eyes or Cabaret.
Yes, Danielle.
Also, but then that also got me thinking about my other kind of like favorite like music from TV. And I think that you could fully produce the festival that they do in Parks and Rec where they sing Bye Bye Little Sebastian. Because I still sing that song in my head. It's an earworm. Like an inside Andy Dwyer's mind of just like all of like the ridiculous songs he sings from Parks and Rec.
Yes. I'm here for both of those.
The one that's perfect for me already exists. My classmate from high school, Jeremy Zuckerman, wrote the music to the cartoon series Avatar: The Last Airbender. And he is now finally, they worked out the rights with Viacom and all of that to go on tour. And he's touring large cities playing with orchestras, the music from that he wrote for that series, which is incredible. And I hope I get to see it live one of these days.
Well, Brian, you're right. That one is perfect. And Roadco Entertainment is representing Avatar, The Last Airbender in concert. And the two founding principal agents happen to be our guests today. So enjoy this conversation with Dee Dee Perez and Jenny Sirota, the founding and principal agents for Roadco Entertainment.
Dee Dee Perez, I'm the principal agent for Roadco Entertainment.
Jenny Sirota, I'm the principal agent for Roadco Entertainment.
Thank you for joining us today. Let's start with the just basics. How did you originally get interested in the world of the arts to begin with?
I went to Fordham University and I went into communications and media studies. And while I was at Fordham, I got heavily involved in theater. I was an actor and a stage manager primarily. And I thought I wanted to be a stage manager professionally for Broadway and for touring and that kind of thing. When I graduated, my first real job out of college was I was working for, at the time, Clear Channel Entertainment, and I was on the general management staff. I was the administrative assistant to the general manager at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts, which is a Broadway theater. The show there at the time was 42nd Street. My office was in the theater. I loved being in the theater. At the same time, I was also in a theater company. And I think as I was in my position there, I realized that stage management wasn't really for me. I think it was the hours that kind of threw me. I didn't want to have the evening work life, so to speak. I was deep in that job and also doing the theater company on the side. I was acting and then was dabbling in writing and directing. About 6.5 years later, I was laid off from the Ford Center. Spider-Man Into the Dark, I believe it was called, the Broadway musical, the infamous Broadway musical, was coming into the theater, and the opening for that kept being delayed and delayed. And so eventually they had to lay off almost the entirety of the general management staff. And my boss at the time was best friends. I mean, he's still best friends, but best friends with Brett Sirota, who is a partner at the Road Company.
And what else?
And also my husband, which happened much later. I started working there and started working in the touring side of things, which I had no idea even existed at the time.
It is it's one of those jobs you don't realize is a thing until you start doing it.
Right.
And I actually had an agent for commercials. I was with Don Buchwald for commercials. And I remember telling them what my job was at the time and that I was at an agency for touring shows. And they had no idea that kind of agency existed.
Jenny still does commercials too, which is pretty cool. My background's much different. I went to school for law and I worked as an attorney in Florida. And my family was big into sports. That was our live entertainment. We didn't grow up going to shows and everything like that. And I think it's difficult for a child to be exposed to that without their parents, just because it's an expensive hobby, you know, and if everyone's family is spending money for sporting event tickets and not theater tickets, then you don't really, really get that exposure. So I moved to New York and then, of course, was immediately exposed to it because
it's
everywhere.
And I happened to know somebody who knew somebody in the industry. I had that law and lawyer background. And so an agent kind of made sense. I wasn't sure what kind of agent it would be. And I ended up meeting Steven and Brett, who brought me in and kind of took a chance on me. And that was 10 years ago. And here I am.
It's a great pathway. You mentioned the Road Company, but there's a new company that you are with now, which is Road Co. How did that happen? Where did that come from? Because I feel like that's a really unique portion to this.
It is. It's confusing because the names are similar, but it's by design because we did want people to know that we are connected. So we're kind of sister companies. Stephen Lindsay and Brett Sirota, who are the founders of the Road Company and been doing this for 30 plus years, they've made so many connections in the industry. They ended up connecting with a couple of execs at Sony Masterworks, which is a division of Sony Music Entertainment, when they were all working on the SpongeBob musical. And they had been talking to them about different Sony properties and all the touring opportunities for that. And it kind of became this natural conversation of we should have this in-house booking agency with Sony that can work on those things. So this was years in the making and a conversation that had been batted around for 5 years. The plan was to launch this agency in 2020, which was always the plan. They didn't realize that 2020 would look like what it did. So it was kind of funny in September of 2020 when we opened, there was so many agencies popping up out of necessity. People were getting laid off. You know, we needed to change the industry to make it work. And then we were popping up too, being like, us also.
And Dee Dee and I, our history is we both worked at the Road Company back in the day and then for different reasons left at different times. And Dee Dee went to Theater Mania. I went to Cami Music to be an agent. Steven contacted us when they were getting towards the end of the planning process of this company and asked us both to come on and kind of lead this company into the future. And at the time, and it was during COVID that this was happening. And, you know, Steven is a salesman and it's a great Sony agent. Company, great agent. It was a no brainer. And especially to team up again with Dee Dee and to take us, you know.
We had loved working together back in the day. And so yeah. We had maybe 3 or 4 years apart. In the middle of pandemic, I get a call from my old boss and he's like, hey, I'm opening a new agency and Jenny's doing it. Do you want to do it too? And I was like, no.
She said no like 5 times.
But again, he's a great agent. And yeah, it made total sense. It's such a great opportunity. So unique. The difference, I would say, because a lot of people ask between the Road Company and the Road Co, the major difference is the Road Company is such an established, incredible Broadway booking agency. That's really their bread and butter. Road Co is really focused more on commercial. We are kind of this in-house agency for Sony properties. So a lot of our roster is a Sony Pictures Animation film and concert or a Sony Legacy artist. artist tribute show, you know, or something like that. So we really have that Sony bond with a lot of the offerings that we have on our roster.
Everyone who knows who Sony is. And that's an incredibly powerful card to have when starting an agency.
Oh, it made all the difference, honestly.
It's a safety net, too, especially in this industry. We're a startup with the support of Sony.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah. Not even just like, I mean, Sony's our employer. We use Sony insurance, Sony pays our paychecks and everything like that. But having the backing of Sony legal with contracts or issues with stuff like that has been immeasurably powerful. And then just having this source of people that are constantly coming up with ideas, and we're getting pitched things like weekly, like, oh, you know, you would be blown away by the reach that Sony has. Like, you don't even think about it. Like, Mariah Carey, you know, is a Sony artist. So what if we created something? And it's so like our Johnny Cash musical, we worked with John Carter Cash, his son.
And the actual estate of Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Like, we're working with legit people. We have this show coming up called Insidious. It's an in-seat immersive experience. And we're working with Blumhouse Productions, who do Saw It.
All of the
horror film franchises. So it adds, obviously, legitimacy to everything that we do, too.
Yeah.
Which quality is important to us, especially coming from the Road Company, which was
Broadway.
It was
high quality.
Broadway. It's premier quality. And so we wanted to have that assurance, too.
And it's a natural feed of new projects, new content, new things on your roster that are being not even like pitched to you by some outside source. It's all internal from Sony, and typically with name recognition.
Absolutely. And we can bring ideas to the table. Like, that's the cool thing about our job, too. And for the first 8 months, it was just Didi and I. So it was balancing, and it's still a balancing act because we're a small company of six right now, of doing our jobs as agents, but also coming
hunting.
Up, yeah, yeah, hunting and creating and coming business up with new ideas and at the same time then expanding our company so that we can handle all of these ideas. And especially in this industry, it can take 2-3 years for an idea to come to fruition. So you're always thinking ahead at least a couple of seasons, mapping out what you have lined up.
Yeah, I had a conversation yesterday with a presenter about our PlayStation live in concert show that we have coming up. And he's like, yes, since we've been talking about this for the last 2 years, I'm so excited to finally see that there's something that we have for it. So, and you know, it's PlayStation, it's huge, it's Sony. It's what you think of when you think of Sony. So that's been really, really fun and very, very different from Broadway.
And the opportunity for us, because Sony Masterworks has a bunch of different companies, either distribution or producing management companies. And we've been able to work with all of their different companies, divisions to bring these shows to life. So there's a lot of synergy, and Sony really believes in, and we believe in, the like one family motto of keeping things in house and utilizing each other and making an impact.
With working for and with Sony, is there any pressure when an idea is pitched to you to green light despite any hesitations, or is it an open dialogue? Where does that land? Because it sounds pretty complicated there.
It can be.
And so where does that land, and how does that work to where you know that you're going to be presenting a quality product and
it's something we believe in.
And that it's something that you believe in, and it's not something necessarily forced.
Yeah. It's tricky. It can be balancing. And I think it is an open conversation. There have definitely been ideas that have been thrown out to us that we have said we do not think there's an audience for that, or there's interest in that. Or even, you know, just even logistically, like, oh, well, we would want to take out this tour in the fall. And Didi and I, we have the experience and knowledge of this industry where fall is tricky, you know, or we're leading up to a presidential election. If we're going to bring out this new show, let's open it in the spring to avoid all that, so we can avoid the advertising and marketing hoopla that's going to happen. And they do listen to us in terms of like those kind of adjustments too. And also, because sometimes we're on the ground floor of developing these shows, we take ideas to them as they're developing the show. Like, Didi has had a hand, I think, in kind of steering how shows have come to life based on even conversations with presenters, too, where ideas have been thrown out to us and we throw it out to the producers. And sometimes that kind of stuff sticks, too.
I think we've been really fortunate in that in the Sony Masterworks family, Masterworks Live, which is our division, which is what Jenny said, this compilation of different production and distribution and management companies. We are the sole distribution and producing company in North America. We are lucky in that everybody really defers to us as the experts in what will work. I mean, we've been doing this for 10 years. We have the back, or 10, 15 between all of us, so much history in doing this. And we have Steven and Brett who are really involved in especially in that business development, that internal, like the initial process, that we can kind of have a really great open conversation with our group on what we think would work. We also sometimes call trusted presenters and maybe we would give you a ring and be like, Josh, what do you think about this? Is this something that you think might work? And that's really helpful. And we've, you know, we've been able to do that. And we can come back and be like, listen, I talked to these people, you know, in different parts of the country, and this was the feedback on this, and I don't think this would work. And sometimes we say no to something, and then a couple of years later, it comes back up, and then we're like, okay, we'll give this a shot. And that's even the case that we're at with some of the tours we have now, and we're so pleasantly surprised that we were wrong at first.
Well, and there's so many trend swings within the pop culture of the United States that something that 2 years ago isn't relevant, all of a sudden there are all these things that have popped up that makes it relevant now and makes it a legitimate project that whereas it wasn't before.
Exactly. Or like what's even hot now to see in theater, like a, you know, a tip, like a legacy or a tribute show. There was a time where that was what everybody was doing. And we've kind of seen trending where that seems to be slowing down a little bit. But what we're seeing is that a lot of people are doing live film and orchestra or film with a band or film with kind of some sort of live element with it. And that's actually something that's working really well right now. Even the type of show that we bring out, and we're developing these really cool immersive shows, like Jenny mentioned, Insidious. And it's something new, it's something hot, it's something different. And we're able to use the Sony IP in different ways, to make Insidious an immersive show, but to make Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse a film in concert, and to make Johnny Cash a tribute style show. It's all fits with the time and what makes sense kind of trending in the industry.
You were lucky enough to have a title that kind of blew away the industry on a touring standpoint on your first year of actual touring with the agency. How did Bluey Live come about for the company? And what was that experience like watching it develop and watching it take off?
It's actually funny that you mention Bluey, because that is a show that Dee Dee and I had no idea what that was. And, you know, we did research, certainly, when we heard that it was over in Australia and selling out, and we watched clips, and we, you know, we did our research. But that's an example of one that we were like, I don't know about that.
We don't have kids. Yeah. And to be fair, when Steven was calling me and being like, do you want to do this? We'll be booking Bluey. Even the name Bluey, I was like, what? Like, that doesn't sound like, is this child friendly? Like, what are we talking about here? And so I spoke to some of my friends who had kids, and it was 2020, and Bluey was just kind of breaking into the scene. And by the time our tour came out in November of 2022, it was as hot as could be. But you sometimes can't predict that. And especially with children's programming, it can be like a flash in the pan, and it can be the hottest thing in the world, and it can be gone next. And so Bluey has such a special element to it. I personally think that it is the fact that parents love it so much. That is the golden ticket for children's programming, because children change their minds so easily. If a parent is like, oh, well, my kid likes this right now, but I hate having to listen to this noise and sound and stuff like that, so I'm not going to buy a ticket until a week before, because, you know, if they're into it, then we'll go and see it. Fine. With Bluey, when it comes out and it goes on sale and the show is 6-8 months from now, the parent are like, well, I'll make sure they still like Bluey then, because I like Bluey.
And there was a presenter who said to me, she was like, I don't even care if my kid still likes it. She's like, a bunch of my like mother friends are going to get a limo and we're going to go to the show, whether the kids come or not. And how that show came to us, Andrew Kay is the producer of that. And at the Road Company, he also was a producer on Choir of Man and Gobsmacked, which were shows that the Road Company did back in the day and shows that I booked when I was there. Steven had that relationship with Andrew from that. And so Steven was able to bring that to the table for us through our relationship with Andrew Kay.
Yeah, we were so, so lucky. I mean, it's funny because we keep talking about how our roster is so Sony-based, and I would say it is majority Sony, but there are certain things on it, Bluey being one of them, and Choir Man actually being one of them, that are not Sony-related at all, and that's just due to our like previous relationships. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, our company exists not to the exclusion of other properties,
right,
which is great. There's no, you know, limit or anything like that to what we can do, which is great.
There's not a competition thing or anything like that. We can choose whatever we want. And even if it's a Disney property or a BBC property or Warner Brothers or whatever it is, it doesn't mean that we can't book it because we have the Sony backing. And Sony is still as enthusiastic. I mean, everybody loves Bluey. It is,
yeah,
like Jenny and I should get Bluey tattoos. It has been like the most fun thing in the world to book. And
we will.
I hope that we can book it forever and ever. Right now, our tour will be on the road for 2 whole years with no layoffs. So it's like 105 straight weeks of touring. And it's been magic.
Yeah.
So we're really, really excited about it. We never want it to go away. And we have a new show in development for 2025, Bluey's next stage show. So hopefully it never will.
Speaking as a parent, Bluey is so special. It's one of those things as a parent that my daughter would fall asleep and I'd keep watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I've cried at I don't know how many episodes because they have this beautiful balance of the complications and the emotional difficulties of parenting. And when you want to give up, like you're seeing it represented through these dogs on the screen in such a beautiful way.
It's art. It really yeah. is.
And
it's so rare.
Yeah. And so any parent at any point is happy to just say, let's turn on some Bluey because you know it's safe. You know it's not obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that, well, my problem is if I'm trying to get something done, I'll stop and I'll watch it anyway.
Well, the episodes are short, so yeah. you can spare 7 minutes.
Yeah, but that's it doesn't just stop at 7 minutes.
Oh, of course. You got to watch all of them.
You lock in. And so, I mean, there really is a magic there. And so every parent, whenever they saw Bluey Live was happening, immediately wanted tickets.
And the stage show, honestly, it's the TV show on stage. Like it has that same magic. Even the production for it, from an agent standpoint, it's almost a pain in the butt because we were somewhat limited in the venues that we could put it in because it has items that fly in. It has this incredible, beautiful lighting and stage and sound, and it needed a top tier like proscenium theater. We couldn't, you know, it wasn't just LED screens that you could throw up in an arena and like, you know, have somebody in a big costume in front of it. It was art. I mean, it is art. It's a baby Broadway is kind of how I describe it. You know, like it has a load in that is substantial. It's beautiful. It really is.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about was it was a show that I had booked with you, and I was handed, whenever we booked it, one of the most beautiful marketing packages I've ever seen. And is that something that's a result of working with Sony, that you get all of this amazing stuff, or is that something that you guys have orchestrated with creating the agency and being very thoughtful and specific about how things are going to go out?
Honestly, it's the people we work with. It's not necessarily coming directly from Sony, but it is. We work with GEA Live a lot, which is a Sony Masterworks company, and they put so much effort and detail into the trailers and the materials. And then we partner with a marketing company. A lot of our shows are marketed by Soloshu Creative. They take so much care in putting together marketing guides, and they are and have been the marketers for different venues specifically too. They do that as well. So they know what venues need. They know what kind of handholding different, you know, and what's helpful.
They're so hands-on.
Yeah. And they're just lovely people too. So
this is an ad. Hi, Craig and Cass. Soloshu Creative.
So we try to get them involved in whatever projects we can, because we know that, frankly, it's a pitching point for us mm-hmm. to be able to say that they're attached to
and
this.
And to show you that package, right? Like, yeah. Look what we can provide you.
Yeah.
And
just the detail of, like, it was a 14-page document.
Yeah.
And within that document, there were examples of social media posts, both horizontal, vertical, and with each example, there was a full layered PSD file in a Dropbox that you can connect to and brand for yourself, and copy and paste actual headings to go with it, along with all of the hashtags and everything necessary. There was a guide to, for each one of those things, whenever you're going to put social media promotion by it, there was, here are your full demographics, here's how you craft your audience there,
here are suggested dates to do it. The show we're talking about was Our Planet Live in Concert. And there's so many, like, you know, national
Panda Day.
Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah. And you post the picture of the panda and you say this. Yeah.
So, and there was a 20 date list.
I've never realized how many national days there were for
and
that.
And it was probably the most beautiful and complete marketing package I had ever been placed in front of me. And as soon as I got it, I was like, okay, yeah, this is going to be great.
They're also on Bluey.
They are. They're the marketers for Bluey and a lot of our projects. And we do try to keep close the people that we know do good work. And so we bring them in a lot of stuff. We work, like Jenny said, with GEA Live. The producers for that are the producers on several of the shows on our roster as well. I think that's something we take a lot of pride in, is because we do have a lot of these unique, different kinds of experiences or newer kind of ideas, we want to set up everybody for success. Jenny and I are anxious by nature people, and we feel very responsible when we sell something. And so if we're not doing our job technically after we've booked it and the contract is done, like, we've done what we're supposed to be doing, but we are a full service agency. Like, until the show is loaded out of your venue, we want to make sure that everything you had and everything you needed was, you know, done to make it the most successful and just nicest experience for everybody involved.
And we're in, you know, no doubt a risky business, right? And mm-hmm. we want to be able to control and feel proud of our side of it. We don't want it to be risky whether or not the show is any good. Yes. We want it to be a quality, good show. And the risk, you know, is naturally inherently there with this business in terms of sales. But we want to make sure that even if a show, you know, isn't selling the way we expected, that the audience that's there, the presenters that bought it, believe in it mm-hmm. and had a great time and love it and are talking about it after the fact.
Yeah.
In a good way.
You get a presenter that has an expectation for a show. And let's say it doesn't sell. It's not moving the way that they thought it was going to. And they start reaching out to you. You have set them up for success in so many ways with great marketing materials, great marketing guides, great productions. Where can you go from there? How do you work with that presenter at that point to help them feel like that they are supported?
Honestly, a lot of that comes from the marketing team, from Solo Shoe Communications or whoever we're using, and our communication with them. We want to make sure that, again, through every step of the process, you feel like you're being taken care of and that we're listening and that we care and that we're, you know, taking these things to the producers as well. We're not just going to leave and back out
And we want to hear about it as early as possible.
Yeah.
Like, when somebody starts raising a red flag, we start internally email threads with the marketing team, with the production. We're so fortunate that a lot of the tours that we work on, like, for example, Our Planet, we were in partnership with the Our Planet, like, brand. So they would post on their social media about it. With Johnny Cash, we have a partnership with the estate. So actually, just earlier this week, the estate posted another thing with all of the dates for our spring tour. And that just, you know, it's getting so much buzz and people are commenting on it. And, oh, it's coming to my city, that they didn't even realize. So it's really, really helpful when people let us know that, because we provide the tools in the beginning to get it going, but sometimes it can stall. And so being able to just nudge people and be like, what if we did this? What if we looked at this differently or gave a little more attention here? Or can we get the estate to post something specifically about this market? It makes a difference.
This is a relationship business, and the best relationships are when everyone is communicating and, you know, not just sitting there stewing that something is not going well. We want to be able to work with you whenever we can.
And still, sometimes it might fail. And so after that, we hope that it was a beautiful show. We hope that everybody that attended enjoyed it. And then we hope that the next time, whatever we're working on with you, we can make it up for you.
So much of your roster is heavily national branded, internationally branded. And there is a brand identity with that. There is brand control with that. Where does that land for creative thinking on a touring level while balancing the demands of the brand recognition and the brand requirements? How much of creating how you're going to tour is based on the way that you need to maintain that branding?
It's so dependent on the brand. The BBC is incredibly precious on the Bluey brand. There are certain ways that that show can be presented in marketing, even sponsors or something like that are very vetted. You know, it needs to be something that makes sense with Bluey. You can't be Bluey sponsored by Guinness, you know?
Yeah.
But Choir of Man sponsored by Guinness all day long. So it's very, very brand specific. Our marketing team does a lot of that. That's a lot of really where they talk to the brand and figure out what makes sense and what works. So we're lucky with that. And even the producers have a good hand in that because they're the ones that are getting us the rights to these shows. So the producers handle a lot of that. And then we, case by case, of course, the market will come to us and be like, I have Bluey and I want it to be sponsored by the local children's hospital or something like that. That's something that we think might make sense. And then we'll send an email, you know, kind of advocating for that. Working with so many different brands, really interesting because it is huge. Huge IP, and it's things that everybody knows and it's everywhere. So we want to be cautious not to put something out there that isn't what the brand wants to present. But we have so many, like, it can take a long time to get stuff out because we have so many checks and balances with it. So we try to wait until our materials are fully vetted and ready to go before we even, you know, start sending stuff to people. And that's kind of been that. It's just, it takes a little bit longer with all the different brands and all the big brands. There's a lot of big personalities, but in all of a good way, everybody wants the best for their brand.
Is a part of that the approach with such a complete branding package and marketing package whenever it goes out in the first place that there's not necessarily a ton of extra room for creativity because so much is laid out in front of you already as far as a possible way to do this.
And that's why we talk about these shows, like I said, like years in advance. The development for this takes a long time because of that, because we need to make sure all of our ducks in a row and because we need to make sure Netflix is happy with this and Sony's happy with this and the BBC is happy with this. It is fully developed and vetted when we get out. And that's like our dream, to be able to pitch a show and send you a package like that, especially even like in to convince you that this is something you're going to want to book because look at this marketing package, makes our jobs so much different, so much not easier because nothing's ever easy, right? It's so much more compelling. We get frustrated sometimes because it can take a long time to get something to come to fruition. But when it comes to fruition and we have all of that backing and everything makes sense, I think.
And even when we have that collection of materials or whatever, there is definitely still room for the marketing team and the brand, the producers, to continue to develop ideas and to come up with different ways to sell something or market something. Oh, yeah. Or, you know, that is ongoing the entire time. But it's that initial putting everything together. That's where we're like anxious. We want to be like, but I want to show the deck for this because it's really cool. And I can only describe something so much because in some cases we're selling air, right?
It like, doesn't exist yet.
It doesn't exist. It's being developed. So, and there's only so much I know technically to be able to talk about with certain shows. And I want to be able to show the presenter what I'm talking about and, you know, no, this is legit. This is this is a real thing. And now you can picture it too in a better way.
You make a really good point. The marketing does continue to develop like throughout the whole tour. Like even with Our Planet, which you did, we were in partnership with the World Wildlife Fund on that one. And I remember the tour was opening in February maybe. And in December, the World Wildlife Fund sent out to all the venues those little plush animals. When you get them, you have adopted a, you know, a panda or a polar bear or whatever it is. And you've put money towards, so they put money towards the funds for each of these different animals and sent one to each of the venues. And each of the venues was free to do their own really unique marketing with the animal. And it was so cute. It was kind of like when kids get like a class or a flat Stanley or one of those and bring it to different places. People were like showing their different animals, like leading up to the show in different areas in their city and everything like that. And that's something that they allowed the marketing teams to run with as much or as little as they wanted to. So we can get a lot of freedom to change stuff. It is just, it's so brand specific, but I think when it works and it's something that is for the greater good, you know, everybody wants to succeed.
Yeah. Well, with that partnership, William Shatner also came on at that same time.
Yeah, that's
and that changed a lot of the marketing materials that went out. There were a lot of William Shatner narratives and videos that included William Shatner's.
Yeah, and him posting on his pages and everything like that.
And that changed
came,
a lot.
That and was that came late. To fruition, yeah, late in the game. We didn't know that he was going to be a part of it.
He wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, so So we're like, by all means.
Sir. And of course that changes the entirety
no to William Shatner?
Of the show.
And that's something that's so cool with the kind of stuff we do because it is not established. Like Jenny was saying, it's stuff that is in development. So it can change and evolve up until it goes out. And so and the producers continually work to improve it, you know, like up it, they're coming up with ideas and things to help it stand out, like adding William Shatner and stuff like that, up until a month before. And that's fun because they didn't need to. The tour was fully booked. We couldn't add a date on that if we tried. But it was going to help and it was going to make it better for everybody. So we added it.
And that's something with the different companies that we're working with and with Sony and with these big brands, it's important for them for these shows to succeed too. Mm-hmm. So they're invested in putting all of their effort and doing social media blasts and all that kind of stuff because it reflects on them.
As we kind of wrap up here, I want to take you guys back in time to right when you signed on to do Roadco. Knowing where you're at now, what advice would you have for yourself in that new startup at this point?
It was such an uncertain time for the entire world and everybody. It's wild that we all survived that. And so to be in the middle of that and to be leaving jobs that Jenny and I had been with for years to start something brand new, it was scary. Early on, there was just some natural uncertainty. We being two women in the industry and leading this company, and it's so funny because we do like these Sony summits where all of the companies that are under this Sony Masterworks umbrella come together. And it is 99% men. And then Jenny and I, and we'll be up there and we'll be talking about what we're doing and stuff like that. And I think just believing in ourselves, just having confidence, and even if it's just acting, like pretending that you're confident, you know what you're doing, people start to believe it. And then it becomes true. Just continuing to stay educated, because especially in our industry, trends are changing so much. You need to keep up with what's, you know, happening. And when we really tried to do that, especially coming out of the pandemic, what audiences were coming back to the theater sooner and how we could reach that audience, because maybe the older people weren't coming in soon. So my advice is to, which I think we tried to do the best we could, but to believe in ourselves as much as we can, just remain confident and stay educated and stay flexible, because this industry is going to change forever. And we want to offer things that people aren't thinking of yet. And we want to be on the forefront of what's changing.
And to trust ourselves.
Yeah.
We know what we're doing.
Yeah.
We know what we're doing. And
was that something that was difficult for you in the pandemic and starting a new agency with branding?
We had never been in charge before.
In that way?
Yeah. So I think a little bit. And Jenny and I are like 100% equal partners. Like we're the principal agents and we kind of run the day to day. Stephen and Brett, who started the company, they're there. They're around. They're amazing resources to like bounce things off of. But if we say no to something, it's us saying no. If we say yes to something, it's us saying yes. So I think that's a unique opportunity that we had not had previously, because we had always been, you know, kind of a second in command position. Yeah, we needed to trust ourselves and trust each other. And that's been, I think, the best part of this entire thing, is that we do so implicitly, and the teamwork and our company, we're in love with our team, and everybody is so invested and everybody is just so well connected and everyone trusts each other. And that's been amazing. But yeah, we hadn't had that opportunity before. So we got really handed such a gift.
And I think daily, Dee Dee and I just text ourselves back and forth. Like, we're so lucky. Like, our team, like, we are obsessed with them. It's a testament to us, too, of creating that.
We took a long time to hire.
We were very picky. You know, we even had Sony support in the hiring process, which was great. We trusted our instincts and we trusted each other, and we could not be happier.
So what is your favorite part about the industry right now?
I think the opportunity. I get so excited because I'm working with people that I've now known for 10 years. And I sat down yesterday with a couple of presenters. And when they sat down, I was like, oh no, what am I going to pitch them on my roster? I know when I was at the Road Company and I had Broadway, that they do 2 Broadway shows a year. And that makes sense. But are they going to do my film and concert? Or are they going to do my video game concert and all this kind of stuff? And they were excited about it. And they were like, you know, this isn't an audience that we typically bring in, but we did this and we saw parents bringing in kids, and this might be some way to like bridge that gap that we don't have. And coming out of the pandemic, that's something that everybody's looking for. It's a way to bring in new audiences and a way to keep live entertainment and theater alive in different situations in our society. And so that's what I think is the most exciting, is selling air can be hard. Selling ideas and selling concepts can be so hard. Things are changing, and there's a lot of opportunity to come up with these really cool different kinds of experiences for people and bring in brand new audiences and work with venues that we've worked with for decades in brand new ways. And people seem open to it, which is exciting.
I love that the partnership with Sony and the known branded content that you're bringing to the to the forefront is a great bridge for people because it's something that's been in their homes and that they are comfortable with and then can now bring in a new audience because it's something that's already associated and comfortable. And it's not, while it's a new experience for that theater, it's not something brand new experience-wise for the people coming because they know the brand so well.
You said that better than we could.
Yeah. And a lot of what is working right now, and of course things change, you know, daily, is comfort food, something that people understand. They're willing to spend their money on something that they get right off the bat. That is something that even if we're, you know, twisting a brand in a way that's never been done before, it's still that brand that people recognize. And hopefully that will translate to audiences.
There's like millions and millions of PlayStation consoles in homes already. Have you ever had this immersive live concert experience of PlayStation? No, but I definitely know all those games. I definitely know that console. Like, that's something. Yeah, it's actually the 30th anniversary of PlayStation when our tour goes out. You're so right, Josh. Do you want a job? Because the bridge thing is exactly, it is this new concepts and ideas with things that people are so familiar with. And that has given us such an opportunity to work with everybody. You know, we are a something for everybody agency, which I think is really unique.
Thank you both for sitting down today. Thank you for your time and your insight into such a cool new agency that is doing things in just a little bit of a different way.
Thank you for having us.
Love that conversation. Thank you so much, Josh. And I really just think that all we need to do is just talk about our love of Bluey. Danielle, Josh, me, we all have kids that watch Bluey. So Danielle and Josh, your thoughts on the Bluey Live experience?
I was literally just talking to people yesterday about my love of Bluey. And now I feel so upset, and I already was upset that I missed it when it came to DC. But I would love to be like those moms who took a limo to Bluey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Without their kids.
All joking aside, Josh, this was such a fantastic interview with Dee Dee and Jenny. We were lucky enough to have Bluey Live come into our area a few months ago and went and saw the tour. And I agree with Jenny and Dee Dee. Like, it is such a beautiful show. The production quality is so high. The sets are gorgeous. The lighting is incredible. They have, I don't want to give too much away, but kind of the opening scene, they have some different puppets involved in that. And it's maybe one of the best made for young audience shows, like commercial type shows that I've ever seen. I was really, really pleased with it. And the kids had an amazing time and the adults had an amazing time. So everything they had to say about it, in my experience, has been true.
Just to change gears for a minute, I liked their advice about faking confidence until it became real. I'm thinking back to when I first started and I talked about how I, you know, thought I was playing a role of this professional and just always had to be right all the time. But what I was lacking was the confidence.
I thought it was such a great piece of advice to just simply believe in yourself. Mm-hmm.
That part really struck me as well. A really great leader in our life sent us a TED Talk video a few years ago on that topic. And sort of how it ended was the speaker saying, it's not about faking it until you make it. You fake it until you become it. Like, you don't just like one day all of a sudden have these skills and this ability. It's like you just got to go in with the confidence. And then one day you're going to look around and be like, oh, I am the person that I wanted to be. Look at that.
What led into that conversation, that story about being the only two women in a room of Sony executives, like, I was like surprised, but not surprised at the same time, like, sadly. And I just really appreciated their candor about that situation that they find themselves in. And I think to have a fully female led agency in even in this day and age in our industry is still pretty rare. You know, I can think of a few others off the top of my head, but a majority of them don't have women in those sorts of leadership roles. So I really appreciated kind of that perspective and hearing the story of how that all came together and how it was like, them or nothing, right? They were the two that were being sought after to lead this new endeavor, which I thought was really impressive.
And that was made very clear because Dee Dee turned it down like 5 times before she finally accepted it. Like, they kept pursuing her because she was the right person for it.
Yeah. And it was pretty clear as to why. I mean, just listening to them talk about their company and the, you know, the shows that they're represented and the things that they're creating, it was obvious that they don't have the mentality that they're the smartest people in the room, that they were willing to, you know, reach out to colleagues and reach out to talk to people to go, okay, maybe we're not right on this. Like, what do other parts of the world or other communities think about some of these properties? to sort of understand that from a top-down approach is really great. And you can see that it's not just having, you know, Sony's IP that makes them successful. It's being willing to reach out to other communities and really know, you know, get a chance to know their markets.
I also really appreciated working with brands and these really huge popular titles, but I don't remember if it was Didi or Jenny that mentioned, you know, that it's still art, that there's still focus on quality and making sure that it's something meaningful, which goes back to a lot of the things we've talked about previously between, like, we kind of always put this commercial category into a box as though it's not art, but it is, it's all art. It's just a, you know, it's just more popular and that's why it's commercial. I, you know, I always tell people when they're like, oh, well, that's commercial, not art. It's like, well, Yo-Yo Ma is commercial, you know, in technical terms, but he's also art. Like, just because it's popular doesn't mean it's not art.
And I think I even said this during the interview, it's such a great way to bridge that gap between fine art and commercially viable, you know, things where, like, especially with their PlayStation Live product, that's reaching a completely different genre of people than has been done before. So I think that's so exciting that they're pushing the boundaries in that way to create those bridges to get people into the hall.
And I think, Josh, you know, some venues are specific in mission. They are a specific jazz club or something like that. But for performing arts centers, where we really do want our programming to feel accessible to all people, and we are building these spaces with everybody in mind, we do need to be more open to this. I think, like, probably very early on in my career, I wouldn't have been as open to some of these projects that they were talking about today. But in doing community engagement work and really thinking about accessibility in a very broad sense, changing the mix of programming and what is going to appeal to families with young kids, middle schoolers, high schoolers, seniors, people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, from different life experiences, all of those things are valid. And those are the way to build the bridges to create more diverse audiences and to create experiences that are going to keep people coming back to our venues. And that's the thing that I think we all are struggling with and, like, has to be a focus for us moving forward. And that idea of comfort food, like, how many of us watched our favorite television shows over and over and over again during the pandemic because they brought us comfort? That's not necessarily a bad thing right now in our spaces to get people to come back and have those shared experiences. And hopefully then they will explore more and different things down the line. But yeah, let's figure out how to get them to step in the door first. And then we can share with them all these other amazing things that we have to offer too.
And a lot of these, like, in concert offerings that they have, that's been something that a lot of symphonies across the country have been doing for a while. But, you know, standard PACs that don't have an in-house symphony haven't been able to tap that part of the market. And these specific tours are a way for that to start happening for PACs in general that aren't connected to a symphony because they tour with the musicians and everything else. And so I think it's a really great way for accessibility in the field outside of the symphonic world as well.
And these kind of shows too are also a great way to keep a customer, because that's always half the battle in marketing of, before they get there, sending them a special email and giving them, like, a drink ticket. Or after the show, again, sending, like, a different email of, like, hey, we saw you were here for the first time. Hope you loved it. You know, here's a 10% off if you use it by a certain deadline or whatever. And just being able to form a relationship with people with something that they're already comfortable with, and hopefully turning them into returning patrons.
All right. Well, thank you, Jenny, Didi, for sitting down with me at APAP to record this. Kevin, again, congratulations on your new position as alderman. Thank you all for listening. Pod Squad, thanks for being here again today. We'll catch you all later.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to There's No Business Like. Our producers and hosts are Brian Zelmer, Josh Benson, Kevin Maynard, Katie Miller, and me, Danielle Vanhoek. Views expressed in this podcast are ours alone and are not reflective of the organizations we are a part of. Keep up with us at nobusinesslike.com. There you'll find links to all of our episodes and socials. If you like this podcast, give us a like, a follow, a review, or our favorite, a 5-star rating. Oh, wait, what was that site? I got it. Don't worry. It is nobusinesslike.com. Do I sound out bus-I-ness every time I type it? Yep, sure do. Stay in touch, my friends.
Before we get going with our question for the end today, Let me start that over and not belch into the mic.
My work brother does that a lot, and then he just says guy stuff.
Oh.